You're tuned to WFHB.
Volunteer powered,
listener supported,
community radio for South Central Indiana.
Good afternoon. Reporting for WFHB, this is Noelle Herhusky Schneider.
And I'm Cade Young. You are listening to the WFHB local news for Thursday, March 7th, 2024.
In today's feature report, WFHB correspondent Brooklyn Lambright discusses the Bloomington Women's Liberation Movement in a new episode of History Unbound. More in the bottom half of our program.
Also coming up in the next half hour, local activist Courtney Daly was selected as the District 5 representative for the Bloomington City Council. More coming up next in your daily headlines.
On Saturday, members of the Monroe County Democratic Party hosted a caucus for the District 5 City Council seat. Shruti Rana was originally elected in November, but announced her resignation in early February, leaving the District 5 seat open. In Rana's place, the Monroe County Democrats selected local activist Courtney Daly as the new District 5 representative. Daly works as an associate director of admissions at the IU Kelly School of Business and as an organizer for the gun control advocacy group, Moms Demand Action. Daly discussed why she wanted to pursue the city council seat and what her main priorities will be in the role.
I'd like to tell you a little bit more about why I am running for this office. Several years ago, when I met my husband, we were living in New York City, and he was from Northern Indiana. I was from the East Coast. He wanted to get back home. I intended to stay on the East Coast. We almost didn't get married because we thought we were never going to find a place where we could both want to put down roots and be happy and raise our family. So fast forward several years, we ended up in Bloomington, Indiana. And I can very, very vividly remember the exact moment where we realized we were home. We were walking around the square downtown with our two young children. We were stopped at a traffic light waiting to cross the street. And we both just kind of looked around and sighed. And we said, we did it. We're home. And so that is what Bloomington symbolizes to me. It is a place where we found our safety and where we could raise our family and put down roots. And that is what I want for other young families and any other individual who is looking for that same exact thing. I want Bloomington to be that welcoming place of safety and home for everybody who wants that. Now, I know that as a community, we are faced with some very big challenges. We talk a lot about the unhoused. We talk a lot about affordable housing and sustainability. And so these are some very large challenges that we need to be facing and coming together to try to work on. And we say that we want to do that. And I believe that we all really mean that. But of course, that means making some really tough decisions in order to be able to tackle these issues. And so to have those tough decisions ahead of us, sometimes we're going to have to make some sacrifices and we're going to have some really hard conversations and re-examine our values. Are we prepared to really adjust what we need to adjust, excuse me, to address these issues? And so part of that then is being in a position to have those conversations and understand that we're not going to make everybody happy. So we need to listen to all the stakeholders involved with empathy and be clear in our decisions and communicate with transparency so that everybody understands why the decisions are being made that they are in order to get to those more difficult places.
The caucus selected Daly over former Fire Chief Jason Moore and Jenny Stevens, a candidate for the District 5 seat in the 2023 primary. Daly began her term on the City Council at last night's City Council meeting.
The Ellettsville Town Council met on February 26 and discussed amendments to the sick leave policy for firefighters and overtime policy for police officers. The council approved changing the firefighters' sick leave policy from earning one sick day every 2.4 months to gaining 10 hours of sick leave every month. According to Fire Chief Kevin Patton, the amendment won't change the firefighters' amount of sick leave. It will just make it easier to track.
Basically, making bookkeeping a little easier. We're not increasing sick time for the firefighters. It's just currently firefighters earn a 24-hour shift or one day every 2.4 months for a total of five shifts for the year. We're just changing it so they get 10 hours per month. It's easier for the clerk's office and for us to keep track of it. But at the end of the year, they're still just going to get five.
The amendment was passed unanimously. Next, the council discussed an amendment to clarify the police department overtime policy. The proposal was immediately met with questioning. In response, Detective Lieutenant Zachary Mitchell mentioned there were still ongoing talks about the policy.
So we met about this last week, and I think that section's kind of redundant. That played into the whole 28-day cycle before. So we were actually discussing about possibly striking that entirely. So we were going to work on this and bring something back to you, but...
And I would suggest that we potentially work on some wording for some of the off-duty things that are worked, because again, the hours aren't necessarily adding up. Where if you take a day off, but you're going to work something outside that the department authorizes, but you're only getting straight time for that, but we're charging that entity the overtime rate. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Councilmember William Ellis moved to table the amendment until a later date. The motion to table was passed unanimously. The next Ellisville Town Council meeting will be held on March 11th.
In today's feature report, WFHB correspondent Brooklyn Lambright brings us another segment of History Unbound. This new segment explores American history and culture through a news lens. Today, in honor of Women's History Month, she brings us two interviews with Nancy Brand and Martha Ficinas, two women involved in Bloomington's women's liberation movement during the 1960s and 1970s. We turn to part one of History Unbound on the WFHB local news.
Kathy Martin. The date is March 23rd, 1977, and I am interviewing Martha Ficinas, who is editor of Victorian Studies, in her office at 338 Ballantyne.
This is an interview with Nancy Brand on January 19th, 1977, at her home in Bloomington, Indiana, concerning her role in the women's movement. This is Terry Anderson.
Welcome back to another episode of History Unbound, a new show here on WFHB. This episode is called The Women of Bloomington, and it's going to feature the experiences of two Bloomingtonians, Nancy Brand and Martha Ficinas. They'll tell you all about their experience in the women's liberation movement of the 1960s and 70s here in Bloomington. I'm your host, Brooklyn Lambright. In Bloomington and across the nation in the 1960s, the women's liberation movement formed in response to the social inequalities women were experiencing. Social inequalities such as unequal pay, workplace discrimination, divorce laws, domestic violence issues, and more. Women across the nation rose up to make their voices heard. And here in Bloomington, Indiana, women were active in creating equitable circumstances for women at Indiana University and across the community. One of those women was Nancy Brand. Nancy was born October 11th, 1943, in New York City. For the first 5 years of her life, Nancy lived with her grandparents. Her father was one of the oldest people drafted into World War II. After graduating high school, Nancy married and had a child. She and her family moved to Queens, where she and her husband attended college. Nancy attended Queens College and majored in Russian history. Nancy isn't sure why she decided to study Russian history, but she thinks it's because her family immigrated from Russia. Before moving to Bloomington, Nancy and her husband lived in West Lafayette. While in West Lafayette, Nancy heard about a march on Washington. It was being organized by various women's groups to protest the war in Vietnam. Here's Nancy describing her first encounter with the women's movement in the 1960s.
So there were about 30 women primarily from Chicago and New York, and a few of them from Washington, D.C., and myself and another woman from Lafayette, Indiana. And those women sat there and they talked about my life. I mean, they didn't know they were talking about my life. They weren't intending to talk about my life. But it seemed to me that they knew everything that had ever happened to me and understood all of its effects perfectly. And not only that, but its causes. And I was just really dumbfounded. It was the first time in my life I had ever had an experience like that. They talked about public women and private women and how public lives and private lives and how women are public people until they stop going to school, and then usually what happens to them is that they get married and have children, or at least in the past that was what happened to them, and then they become private. And maybe they go back out into the workforce, but they're still private women, and the main focus of their lives is at home, and the main problems of their lives are also at home, being disconnected from the public life of the nation and the people around them, the things that, the movers and shakers, the things that make things happen, even on a small level. And usually if they participate in those things, they do it the way that my great aunts did. They do it as volunteers, and it's part of their social life, and it's part of their social commitment, but it's not the main focus. It's not what their real goals are. And that's one of the reasons why a lot of women are real depressed, mm-hmm. and real unhappy with their lives, and, you know, yell at their kids and yell at their husbands and sort of don't understand it. Well, I thought it was very exciting that all of these people knew about me.
Nancy and her husband were active in protests against the Vietnam War. While Nancy was an active member of various anti-war organizations, she often felt her voice was not heard within the organizations. For the first time, Nancy felt she could make a difference within an organization. Her voice was heard within the Women's Liberation Movement. Here's Nancy talking about the anti-war movement and her place within it.
At meetings, we didn't usually get to talk, and when we did, people picked up the thread of the conversation exactly where it had left off before we did talk.
We meaning women.
Mm-hmm. And that the influence that we had on the activities that we participated in really came in direct relation to the influence that our husbands or men had in those organizations.
Nancy was excited to share her findings about the women's liberation movement with her husband. Nancy saw a correlation between anti-war demonstrations and the women's liberation movement. But after sharing her findings with her husband, he saw something else. Nancy's husband instead wanted Nancy to recruit women from the liberation movement to the anti-war movement. And Nancy saw this as the undoing of their marriage.
And then I went home all anxious and excited about this whole wonderful thing that I had uncovered in Washington, and fired up about having a support group, because that's what those small groups that Pam Allen had been talking about were called. And anyway, my husband picked me up at the train station in Lafayette and had made a real nice dinner and apologized for the fact that he had invited a friend of ours, a man friend of ours, to come over and hear all what I had to say. And that was kind of nice because he was taking me seriously as a political person. This is in retrospect. Mm-hmm. And when I got done talking about all of this exciting, wonderful thing that had happened, and they seemed really to be going right along with me and thinking it was just terrific, and I was thinking, oh boy, these women are wrong. Men are really helpful and supportive. I got done, and my husband's and my friend, Eric Hallengren, said to my husband, well, just think, half of the people in the world are women. She's going to organize them all for us into the women's into the anti-war movement. And then I knew that they hadn't really heard what I said at all, that they had only been excited about it because of what they thought it would do for something that they saw themselves as being the focus of and that I was an auxiliary member of. It was at that time that I suppose my marriage began to sort of disintegrate. Not immediate from that moment, but I was really taken aback that my husband didn't contradict Eric, that he didn't understand that there was something more to what I was talking about.
After joining the women's liberation movement, Nancy made several realizations about her own domestic life.
I thought I was really going crazy. I would watch television from morning till night. I would fall asleep with the television on because during part of that time my husband had a job which kept him away at night. I would do almost anything to get out of the house. And not with the baby, without the baby. And those times were so rare that, I mean, I cherished them. And when I finally went back to school, I was so delighted that I had to go on field trips to the Metropolitan Museum and to for anthropology, to the Museum of Natural History and stuff, places where I couldn't drag this child who was between crawling and walking. I was just practically hysterical all the time. I couldn't stand it. I knew I couldn't stand it. But I also didn't know how to get out of it. And going to school part-time wasn't a solution. It really wasn't, because all that did was tend to make me more frustrated at what I couldn't do, mm-hmm. the numbers of things I couldn't do. And I was really very lucky because people supported my going to school. My mother-in-law would come and take care of my kid when I had to write a paper. And, you know, for 5 days I could be a real student and immerse myself in books. And then, of course, I would go back to being part mother and part student and not very good at either one of them. And very frustrated again. But here were these people who understood that and were able to put words to it and were able to put theories to it and to translate it into something that I could take away with me and help try and share with other people.
After divorcing her husband, Nancy moved to Bloomington, Indiana, to continue her education. And while there, she made several contributions to the community. But we'll discuss Nancy's contributions to the women's liberation movement in just a moment. There is another woman I want to introduce you to. Her name is Martha Vecinas. Martha was born November 20th, 1939, in Rochester, New York. Martha studied at Northwestern for her undergraduate, Johns Hopkins for her master's, and the University of Wisconsin for her PhD, after which she moved to Bloomington to begin working at IU. Martha says education was always encouraged in her family, yet her family, especially her mother, wanted her to get married rather than have a career. Here's Martha describing how she first got involved with the women's liberation movement.
So I got on the phone and phoned everyone who was connected with the political left in Bloomington at the time that we could get hold of very quickly. And we sort of sent out word, and approximately 30 women came for a potluck supper at my house, and she talked about the women's movement. And out of that, we decided to form a consciousness-raising group or groups, and the thing very quickly escalated until we must have had maybe 100 women involved in consciousness-raising groups, and were involved in speaking in the dormitories to women, and of course doing a lot of reading. We formed a women's activist group. They had no title, but most of us who had been in consciousness-raising groups wanted to then start doing something on campus. And at the same time, I think Peggy Peterson had just begun to do research on discrimination of faculty women, and Sarah Berry, who was in the economics department with another graduate student, had been doing research. And the evidence showed that particularly, you know, faculty were discriminated against in terms of hiring and salaries and committee work that they were on. So a number of us started putting pressure on the university in this area.
After the break, we'll discuss Nancy and Martha's contributions to the women's movement in Bloomington. We'll be right back. Welcome back. So far, we've met two Bloomingtonians, Nancy Brand and Martha Vecinas, who were a part of the women's liberation movement during the 60s and 70s. But let's go back to Nancy for a moment. When Nancy went back to school in Bloomington, she realized she needed some sort of childcare. When IU asked Nancy to write a detailed explanation of her daycare plans, She realized something needed to change with the university's child care policy. Here's Nancy.
One of the things I needed was daycare, because I was going to go back to school. And this is an interesting thing. One of the questions when I applied for housing as a married student, I needed housing as a married student because even though I was no longer married, I had these children. They wanted me to write a very detailed explanation of what I would do with my children while I was away from home. They don't require that of men who are either widowed or divorced and have children with them. And to this day, to my knowledge, they continue to do that. That is an example of sexism in the university. It was very offensive, but I didn't bother fighting it. I just did it. And what I had to answer them with was this wonderful daycare center that I had just heard about.
So Nancy eventually got involved with the formation of daycares around Bloomington. Here's how they worked.
We met in the farmhouse, and the daycare center always opened at 8 in the morning and closed at 5 at night. And each participating family worked at the daycare center one morning or afternoon shift during those hours once a week, and also had to take on other kinds of responsibilities in terms of its running.
Nancy helped start a daycare for community members and, more specifically, mothers enrolled at IU. More daycares popped up around campus, but eventually Nancy says they, quote, ran out of churches to hold the daycares in, end quote. She also advocated for paid leave for student parents to spend with their children.
One of the goals that we had was to get work release time for parents who worked, and we expected to be able to get that from the university first, and then other large-sized businesses in Bloomington and organizations in Bloomington seeing the shining and beautiful example of the university doing a good thing would
sure
follow along. Well, the university is a big business like everything else, and we were sort of too foolish to understand that.
And so the university said no.
Uh-huh.
Outside of child care, Nancy also helped women find access to abortion care.
It was heard that there was women's liberation in the town, and people started coming to women who were connected to this very loose organization and asking how to get abortions and asking how to get birth control. Knew for some reason or somehow about a doctor in Chicago who performed illegal abortions. Abortion was at this time not legal any place in the state. It was a felony to counsel somebody to have an abortion. And these women were very brave and began sending people to this very strange place they had never met, any of the people connected with, and it was very terrifying. A woman would call us, and we, not knowing very much, would do the best we could to explain to her what exactly was going to happen. One of the main things we were able to do for her was to let her talk and to try and find out from her, or to try and help her find out from herself whether or not she really wanted to have an abortion. Slowly, we found out that we also needed to discover why she didn't have access to contraception, why she was pregnant, how she could get a pregnancy test, all sorts of things. But in the beginning, it was just she had gone to some doctor, and we believed that she was pregnant because she told us she was. Almost immediately, we had to have doctors who would do pregnancy tests who we could refer patients to. And since we were doing something that was grossly illegal, we couldn't include any doctor even in the knowledge of what we were doing. So all we really were able to do was sort of test out doctors ourselves and find out doctors who were sympathetic to women. And try and find out if there were any who were sympathetic to the idea of abortion so that when this woman came back, if she had any problems, she would have somebody to go to who wouldn't immediately send her to jail.
They became known as the Midwest Alliance. Nancy's group helped women access abortions in the state of New York. The Midwest Alliance got calls from all over the country. Nancy counseled women over the phone from Texas, Colorado, California, and beyond. Nancy was also a part of a newsletter called Front Page. The newsletter brought attention to local women's rights issues and the national women's liberation movement. It included interviews from local women who shared their stories about their working and living conditions. Nancy was also active in the establishment of the IU Women's Center. The center housed the newsletter and also acted as a safe place for women to share their ideas and concerns.
And that concludes part one of the Women's History Month edition of History Unbound, hosted by WFHB correspondent Brooklyn Lambright. Stay tuned later this month for part two of the episode.
Support for the WFHB local news is brought to you by MPI Solar, a Bloomington business specializing in solar hot water, solar electricity, and solar hot air systems. MPI Solar designs and installs solar power generation systems that encourage independence and individual responsibility. More information online at mpisolarenergy.com. You've been listening to the WFHB Local News. Today's headlines were written by Cade Young, Elise Perry, and Noel Herhusky-Schneider in partnership with CATS Community Access Television Services. Our feature was produced by Brooklyn Lambright.
Our theme music is provided by Mark Bingham and the Social Climbers. For WFHB, I'm Cade Young.
And I'm Noel Herhusky-Schneider. Thanks for supporting Indiana's only volunteer-powered, listener-supported, independent daily news program. You can hear tonight's full broadcast online at wfhb.org.
The WFHB Local News is also available as a podcast. Just search our call letters, WFHB, wherever you listen to your podcasts. Subscribe to never miss another local news program.
Stay tuned for Big Talk, a one-on-one conversation with some of Bloomington's most fascinating people, coming up next on WFHB.
Listening to the WFHB Local News on WFHB Community Radio. Our news is written and reported by volunteers working to provide local news, cover local issues, and strengthen our local community. We invite you to participate. You may submit questions, comments, and story ideas to news@wfhb.org. You can become a WFHB Local News volunteer by attending new volunteer orientation. Feel free to check out the WFHB Local News Archive at WFHB.org to find newscasts, individual stories, and catch a live feed of the WFHB Local News. We are local, longer,